Abhibhavanti, overcome,
overcome.
He, indeed,
indeed.
Evam, Similarly.
Similarly.
Niyamakrit.
Niyamakrit.
One following regulator principles.
One following regulator principles.
Rajan.
Rajan.
Koking.
Koking.
Shanai.
Shanai.
Gradually.
Gradually.
Shemaya.
Shemaya.
For well-being.
For the well-being.
Opate.
Opate.
Becomes fit. Translation, my dear king, of a diseased person eats pure uncontaminated food prescribed by a physician, he is gradually cured. And the infection of disease can no longer touch him. Similarly, if one follows the regulator principles of knowledge, he gradually progresses towards liberation from material contamination. For part one, is gradually purified if one cultivates knowledge, even through mental speculation, and strictly follows the regulator principles enjoined in the Shastras and explained in the next verse. Therefore, the platform of jnana, speculative knowledge, is better than the platform of karma, fruit of action. There is every chance of falling from the platform of karma to hellish conditions, but on the platform of jnana, one is saved from hellish life, although one is still not completely free from infection. The difficulty is that on the platform of jnana, one thinks that he has been liberated and has become Narayana Bhagavan. This is another phase of ignorance. Because of ignorance, one speculates and thinks himself liberated from material contamination, although not actually he is not. Therefore, even if one rises to Brahma jnana, understanding of Brahman, one nevertheless falls down because of not taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Nonetheless, jnanis at least know what is sinful and what is pious, and they very cautiously act according to the injunctions of the Shastra. To concentrate the mind, one must observe a life of celibacy and not fall down. One must undergo the austerity of voluntarily giving up sense grasp enjoyment. One must control the mind and senses, give charity, be truthful, clean and non-violent, follow the regulator principles and regular chant the holy name of the Lord. Thus a sober and faithful person who knows the religious principles is temporarily purified of all sins of form with his body, words, and mind. These sins are like the dried leaves of a creeper beneath a bamboo tree, which may be burned by fire, although their roots remain to grow again at the first opportunity. Wherefore, Tapas explains Smriti Shastra as follows. A complete control of the mind and senses and a complete concentration of one kind of activity is called tapa. Our Krishna conscious movement is teaching people how to concentrate the mind on devotional service. This is first class tapa. Brahmacharya life of celibacy has 8 aspects. One should not think of women, speak about sex life, dally with women, look lustfully at women, talk intimately with women, or decide to engage in sexual intercourse, nor should one endeavor for sex life or engage in sex life. One should not think of women or look at them, to say nothing of talking with them. This is a first class brahmacharya. If a brahmacharya surrounds and talks with a woman in a secluded place, naturally there will be the possibility of sex life without anyone's knowledge. Therefore, complete brahmacharya practice is just the opposite. If one is a perfect brahmacharya, he can very easily control the mind and senses, give charity, speak truthfully, and so forth. To begin, however, one must control the tongue and the process of eating. In the bhakti marg, the path of devotional service, one must strictly follow the regulated principle by first controlling the tongue. The tongue can be controlled if one chants the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, does not speak of any subjects other than those concentrated concerning Krishna, does not taste anything not offered to Krishna. If one can control the tongue in this way, brahmacharya and other purifying processes will automatically follow. It will be explained in the next verse that the path of devotional service is completely perfect and is therefore superior to the path of food activities and the path of knowledge. Quoting from the Vedas, Srila Viraragavacharya explains that austerity involves observing fasts as fully as possible. Srila Rupa Goswami has also advised that atyahara, too much eating, is an impediment to advancement in spiritual life. Also in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, he who is temperate in his habits of eating, sleeping, working, and recreation to mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. In text 14, the word dhira, meaning those who are undisturbed under all circumstances, is very significant. Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and the disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O sign of Bharata, and we must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. In material life, there are many disturbances. One has to learn to tolerate these disturbances under all circumstances, and he is a dhira. body came of a diseased person eats the pure uncontaminated food prescribed by a physician, he is gradually cured and the affection disease can no longer touch him. Similarly, one follows the regulator principles of knowledge, he gradually progresses towards liberation from material contamination. So, in the previous verse, Sukadeva Goswami spoke of certain niyamas, including jnana vimarsana, in order to cancel out the hellish existence, hellish punishments. This was a different answer from the previous one about karma. So, of course, we have niyamas also in karma itself. But here we have different emphasis on the niyamas or in relation to jnana. So they are assistance to the process of jnana, whereas in karma they are assistance to karma. So he mentions here niyamakrit, one who practices regulator principles. And then by doing so, he gradually improves his condition. So the example here is given of a person who eats proper food, healthy food when he is sick, then gradually becomes cured of the sickness. So similarly, by following niyama or regulations, which include sense control, then he gradually becomes cured of his disease. So the disease, of course, was not just the hellish punishment, but the desires which caused the sinful activities. Pariksha criticized the first answer about karma because it doesn't get rid of the desires. The person still commits sinful acts after he does his atonement. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami is here saying that by doing, following niyamas along with jnana, one is able to control the desires and gradually extinguish them. And then in the next verse, the niyamas are actually mentioned. There's tapas, brahmacharya, sama, dhamma, jaga, satya, socha, yama, niyama, etc. So here we find a whole series of rules, renunciation, voluntary renunciation of enjoyment, which means we make a decision to avoid certain things. Brahmacharya, this is also tapas. And then we have samandama, this is control of the mind, control of the senses, which of course is necessary in order to do tapa and brahmacharya. And tyaga, renunciation again, very similar, means giving up things. And we have cleanliness and truthfulness. Rules, previous rules mentioned as tapas, brahmacharya, sama, dhamma, tyaga, they create internal and external cleanliness. And yama and niyama, positive and negative and positive injunctions, such as not hoarding, etc., or yamas and niyamas, studying the Vedas, etc. These are positive injunctions. By doing this, then one gradually gives up this desire for sinful activity. This is, of course, a comparison is given to the bushes, or dried leaves from the creepers, and they can be burned immediately. But this again is not a complete process, because though we can burn up the leaves, we don't burn up the root. So there is still some possibility there of return, let's say, again, sinful actions and activities and desires. So, nevertheless, it is superior to the process of karma because it is directly trying to get rid of the material desires by giving up identity with the material body. And in pursuit of that, then we have sense control, brahmacharya, tapas, etc., yama, niyama, etc. So, this is somewhat superior. Still, it's considered to be a temporary measure again, because it mentions here that the fire can burn off the leaves, but it does not get to the root of the problem again. So, if niyamas are performed in conjunction with jnana in a proper way, then ultimately one becomes qualified for liberation, so one can do that. But in most cases, it is not done properly, and therefore the jnani does not succeed. So, what does that mean? That means that a person practices jnana, but if he offends the Lord or rejects worship of the Lord, then he falls from his position. He cannot get liberation. So that means he does not actually get both purified and he falls back into the law of karma again. So the perfect jnani is one who actually accepts the Lord also. So he performs jnana, follows these rules and regulations, and at the same time worships the Lord. Then he can succeed in his process of liberation from the material world. So, from this we can understand that the jnana process in itself is dependent upon bhakti. And therefore it's not a perfect process. So, the logical conclusion is if jnana requires bhakti in order to get liberation, why not just do bhakti and get liberation? So, that is the next verse, verse 15. In this verse, Sukadev says, yes, better to do pure bhakti, surrender completely to the Supreme Lord, and one destroys all sin completely, just as the sun destroys the fog. So this is actually the conclusion. So Sukadev has mentioned karma as a temporary process, jnana also as imperfect in itself, and then finally bhakti as the final process, as a solution to the problem of kalash existence, etc. So definitely bhakti also destroys sinful desires, which will cause the sins, the acts of sin, and consequently the result, which is suffering and hellish existence. So all three stages are cancelled out by the process of bhakti, that is, the suffering and the desires behind the suffering that cause the acts, and finally the avidya as well. These are all cancelled out by the process of bhakti. The process of jnana theoretically also should wipe out all three phases, because jnana means knowledge, which is opposite of avidya. So proper knowledge should also destroy karma and the sinful desires and the avidya, the concept of material body, etc., if performed properly. Whereas karma does not destroy the desires nor the avidya. So it is a lot inferior. So, what is the difference between the jnana and the bhakti, if jnana is practiced perfectly? One difference, of course, is that the jnana process is more difficult and it takes longer to do. This is the conclusion reached in chapter 12 of the Bhagavad Gita, that very quickly I will deliver you from the ocean of samsara. This is what Krishna says to Arjuna by the process of bhakti. And when he asks which is better, to do the jnana process or the bhakti process. So it is quicker. The other point, of course, is that if jnana does also not have some bhakti in it, it also does not succeed. So it is dependent on bhakti. Bhakti is not dependent on anything else, only on bhakti. So therefore, bhakti, we can do bhakti alone without doing anything else. Jnana, we must also do bhakti. So that's another difference. The next difference is that the process of bhakti destroys all karmas, prabdha and aprabdha. The process of jnana does not claim to destroy the prabdha karmas, actually. It will destroy aprabdha karmas, but aprabdha karmas remain. So if you're suffering now, jnana is not going to relieve you of that suffering. It will relieve you of future suffering and future births. Because you can get liberation, but present suffering in this body, no, it's not going to act on that. So, bhakti destroys prarabdha and aprarabdha karmas, both. Of course, as well as it destroys the seeds of sin, which is the desires and the avidya behind that as well. So, there's a difference there between jnana and bhakti. Whereas karma doesn't destroy any of the karmas. It increases your karma. It doesn't destroy your karmas, really, because you're doing more activities and creating activities as a result of those activities of doing your practices. You're doing more karmas and you're increasing your load of karmas, etc. So it doesn't really destroy anything. It increases your karmas. You get replaced papa with punya. So, it is not a real solution to the problem. Of these two processes, then bhakti is superior because it is quicker, it is independent of the real process, and, of course, it destroys all the karmas, prarabdha and aprarabdha karmas, as well as the avidya and desires, etc. The goal of bhakti is not to destroy the karmas. So this is an incidental effect. So without effort, bhakti destroys the karmas. Whereas one practices again with effort to destroy karmas, with an intention of destroying the karmas. Which means that the process of bhakti, if you want to destroy karmas, is much easier. So, the story of Ajamil will illustrate that even not doing bhakti, but indirect bhakti, that also destroys karmas. Completely. So, Ajamil chanted the name once, and he destroyed all of his karmas, past, present, future. Instantaneously. Whereas a jnani will have to strive for lifetimes to destroy all of his karmas. So, it's a long process, and it is much more difficult. And a bhakti destroys the karmas even without our knowing about it. Even into unintentional bhakti, if it happens also. So this illustrates the fact that bhakti, therefore, is the superior process among these three. So it completely removes the sin. Attachment to that particular process, usually due to association, one develops a certain attachment to a certain process, and once he starts that, he doesn't want to change it. This was the problem that Narada mentioned to Vyasa. In Kali Yuga, people do one process, they will not change to another process. It's difficult for them to change once they have one habit. So the whole process of starting with karma yoga is eventually to change to jnana and then to change to bhakti. But people won't do that. They won't change. They'll get stuck in one process and that's it. So whatever they start with, they'll just continue with that because they're lazy. And they don't see the conclusion of scripture. So that's why they generally don't change.
Percentage of death problems will vary as compared to mostly many will be innocent. Many are not very innocent.
Well, in the modern world, we can understand that nobody's doing anything really. They're not doing karma, they're not doing jnana, they're not doing yoga, they're not doing bhakti, they're doing nothing. Or if they're doing it, it's a very dull reflection of that process. So they're doing none of these processes. So that, of course, is even worse. They simply have to suffer their hellish existence.
You mentioned about the worship of deities. Does it really indicate the process of archana or some other activity?
No, they cannot commit offense against the Supreme Lord. They have to respect the Supreme Lord. They don't have to do deity worship as such, but at least they have to respect the Lord.
This is something when devotees are doing illness, illness, and accidents.
Well, and though bhakti destroys all the things instantaneously, even by indirect bhakti, the exception is that if one also does aparadhas, then the effect is not instantaneous and it becomes slower. So therefore we have the process like anarthana vritti, where the anarthas are gradually dissipated because the people have offenses, and then the process will be more gradual. So therefore we'll see some remnants of karma. And the other point is that though bhakti destroys all the karmas, we see even in the case of Ajamil, the pattern remained, and he was still doing activities that looked like simple activities. So that's actually not sin itself. It is an arrangement of the Lord to hide the glory of the holy name, that's all, in that case.
So, how can you think that we should not follow that rules regulation? What Sanatana Goswami mentioned in
Well, actually, in Hari Bhakti Vilasa, I don't even think he mentioned the four regulated principles. It's all deity worship. Most of it is deity worship. And things like dharma are secondary there. Conduct of dharma is much secondary. Most of the rules are concerning deity worship. And observance of vows for different things like Ekadasi and the different festivals and other things like that.
But he took it from different scriptures, like different Puranas.
Puranas mainly.
Yeah. So it is not compulsory to follow?
Well, if one is doing deity worship, one uses that as a guide, but at the same time, when he quotes things, one has to see the context of the quotation. Because sometimes he'll say extreme things mentioned in the Quran to go to hell for 20 births if you don't follow a codicil or something like this, or maybe a million births or something like this. And for all different things, there's all sorts of Quranic quotes, etc. But we have to see actually the conclusion of the what he's saying also, and therefore there's sometimes that's mentioned in the commentary of the actual thing we do, rather than doing everything there. So he takes everything that is done in terms of archana, what all the different rules they are, but not necessarily to follow all of them. So sometimes in the commentary he mentions that. Or he says nyasas, we don't do all the nyasas.
Maybe in the future,
after
many hundred years, when this body becomes
future,
always
going to
change, and
then
we
might
be
suitable for the existing. Even now they're saying that. What about the future? No, that's always there. But if you, even if you look in Nectar Devotion, they're not mentioned. Or regular questions not mentioned there either. Now we do see in the Bhagavatam, of course, the four pillars of Dharma are there. That's where we base our four regular principles on. Now the argument against us is we're not following Dharma, we're following Bhakti. You could say that. But the other principle, of course, in Bhakti is that we follow everything favorable for advancement. So obviously sense control is favorable. And lack of sense control, not favorable. So we have to have a minimum of sense control.
also we have some biologists and Janis, the problems that are correlated statistically.
Yeah.
They don't perform properly.
So in themselves, four other principles do not create bhakti, but they're favorable for bhakti. That's why we do them.
Thank you.